it's time now for Women and Money, the part of the programme where we look at finance from a female perspective. And as well as presenting programmes for Share Radio, I'm also the founder of a money website for women called savvywoman.co.uk. So I'm delighted that at this time every week we'll focus on money issues for women. Now, is today your first day back at work after the Christmas break? Or perhaps you've been easing yourself back in gently for the last few days. Either way, are you feeling a bit restless, a bit like you want a change in direction? Or maybe you're happy in your job, but you'd like a pay rise or more responsibility. Today, we're going to be looking at how you can take control of your career. My guests are Mildred Talabi, who's an award-winning career blogger, speaker and author, who's written several books, including Seven Keys to a Winning CV, How to Create a CV That Gets Results, and The Science of Successful Job Hunting. I'm also joined in the studio by Melanie Stancliffe, who's an employment partner with solicitors Erwin Mitchell. Welcome to the programme. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. Mildred, at this time of year, I mean, it does seem to be that sort of restless time of year. Is it the case that, you know, we have for the Christmas holidays, we start thinking about our jobs and so on, and the new year we do just think we just want to change direction? Or is there something more scientific to it?
Hi, good morning, Sarah. Well, I don't know the science part of it, but I reckon what happens is during the Christmas break period is a time that most of us actually, it's the only time most of us get to kind of pause the work, the day-to-day, 9-to-5, and actually have a think about your career and what you want to do, whether you're happy in your job or whether you want to move on. So I think that how that whole period gives you a time to stop and think. And for a lot of people, when they do have that time to stop and think, they think, you know what, I actually don't enjoy my job. I actually want more money, or I actually want to do something different. So I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people then start off the new year with the goal of, that's it, this is the year where I'm going to, you know, move my job, get that promotion, get that pay rise, whatever it is that they want to do with their career.
I'm also joined on the phone by Richard Alderson, who is the founder of Career Shifters. Richard, welcome to the programme. Tell me, first of all, Richard, what actually is Career Shifters?
So we help bright, motivated people who feel stuck in the wrong career and then move into the more fulfilling work. And we do that through workshops and courses and coaching.
And is it the case, I mean, Mildred was sort of saying why it is that people feel at this time of the year, you know, it's kind of new year, they want to get a new job. What's your own sort of work at Career Shifters show?
Very similar patterns. So this time of year is our busiest time. It's where people do reassess their lives and their work within their lives. And the new year often prompts people to say, right, I need to sort this out. I don't want to spend another year in the same position and arrive. I'm still feeling the same way I do right now about my work, by the time next year rolls around. So, yeah.
And Melanie, I mean, both Mildred and Richard have said, you know, there's this kind of impatience and people thinking new year, new me and all that kind of stuff. But what do you see, and what changes can maybe people make to their existing job?
Well, I think the first two things I would mention is that this is the time of year where bonuses are declared. So people are going to hang in and make sure that they get that bonus check. The second thing is, of course, people are trying to look at their work-life balance. It's often something that we've enjoyed over Christmas, and they want to take opportunities to look for flexible working and ask for that. When it comes to their rights to do that, obviously we need to think about whether they've been employed for 26 weeks and therefore can request it to work flexibly. They don't have the right to actually do it, but they have the right to request it. And when you're looking at your pay, it's very important to go back to your contract and think about, well, when is that annual review up? How can I prove I've delivered on all of the requirements and objectives I was given?
As you say, you mentioned that this is the bonus season. And I mean, it can be one of those things where people sort of hang on in quite resentfully, really, sort of waiting to see whether they get a bonus, and if so, how much it's going to be. And then afterwards, there's this, you know, great exit, isn't there? On the issue of flexible working, what does it mean? Because we might have an idea sitting at home of what flexible working means, but from an employer's point of view, what does working flexibly include?
Well, flexibly working means that you can work in a different location. It can mean that you can work for different hours, and it can mean that you can reduce your hours or increase your hours. So working flexibly has a panoply of meanings. What's useful for employers right now is that they're very much looking at their overhead costs. They're looking at people working in a more agile way and working when they're needed as opposed to working set hours. So there is the opportunity to have a real beneficial conversation with your employer if you're in certain jobs to work a bit more flexibly.
And Richard, I mean, as Melanie said, quite often over the Christmas break, you know, you have hopefully a nice long break, and it gets you thinking about the kind of life and career you want. What would you suggest people's starting points should be if they think, I want a change of direction, but really don't know what kind of direction they want to move in?
Sure. So I think the first thing to look at is this a feeling that you've been feeling for some time? And if it is, then there's probably sort of real reason to then do something about it. What we tend to find with our audience is that this isn't something that's just flashed up in the last month. It's something that has been a nagging feeling for months, if not years, that they're simply in the wrong place. In terms of starting points, what we recommend is to start to look at and meet different types of people, get out of your normal environment. The challenge with many career changes that they face is that they're used to working in a certain environment with the same people, and if that environment and those people were going to yield them an answer to what else they could do, they probably would have found it already by now. And so starting to go to events, meet different people, step into environments is a very powerful way to start to provoke new ideas and options for going forward.
And this is a Women and Money programme, so we are talking about this from a female perspective. Do you, Richard, see any gender difference in how women approach a change in career or their motivation for changing career?
So the first thing to say is that about 70% of our audience are women.
So really? Gosh.
Just from the people we work with, when we work with more than 1,500 people every year, helping them with their career change actively, then we have more than half visitors to our website. And as I said, most of those are women. So there's strong evidence that firstly, women are more open to changing. They're more open to help, which is what we provide with that shift. And in terms of the way they go about it, well, we've seen that there's a whole different range of different ways, but I think just their openness to being helped is certainly one big differentiating factor.
And Melanie, from you know, your work, do you see, I mean, I was really interested in what Richard was saying, that 70% of people who come onto their site and who use them are women. Do you see any gender difference? Do you find women are more interested in changing career, or their motivations might be different, or what they're looking for is different?
Definitely. In our experience, about 41% of women are working part-time, or more of those will be seeking to work part-time. So we see women trying to make their work-life balance. I think part of that comes down to childcare responsibilities, which still largely falls on women, but also the fact that many men, when they're doing it, are presenting it in a slightly different way. They're not necessarily presenting it as part-time working.
And Mildred, what's your observation on this? Again, do you notice any difference either in motivation or sort of method of going about getting that dream job?
Yes, I do agree with both Richard and Melanie, but it is with women, I think women do tend to look for more flexible working. I mean, the CV clients that do come to me, I do get a lot of mums returning to work, for example, and if you've had some time off, you know, caring for a child, to go from there to go back to full time, it sometimes can be a big jump. So having a flexible working schedule really does help. So I think that's something that a lot of women do consider and want to make sure that, and I'd like to help them to do that with their CV. So it's all about talking about how you know your skills, the transferable skills that you've gained while you've had time off, can help you when you return to the workplace. So it's about really focusing on your strengths from your time off, as opposed to seeing it as a weakness.
And Mildred, I mean, it's, you know, making generalisations can be sometimes dangerous territory, but women sometimes are described as not going for jobs until they're pretty sure they can do them. So does it help to have somebody else, a friend or a professional like yourself, look at your skills and attributes?
I think it definitely helps. It is something that, yes, generally women are attributed to, but I also think in this culture as well, generally over here in the UK, we're not as open and vocal about tooting our horns, as they say, you know, as they maybe they'll do across the pond, you know. So people tend to be more reserved. So I think having somebody who from the outside to look at your skills and then show you the selling points of it, especially, and how you can put them together, really does make a difference, you know, because then you don't have to feel like, because some people are not comfortable boasting about themselves, but you do need to appear and come across confident. So if you need somebody to help you to see that, then I definitely think it's something worth doing.
And Melanie, I loved that phrase from Mildred about tooting your horn. So something that we should be doing professionally. But is this something that you see as well? I mean, you know, it is one of those urban myths or based in scientific fact. I'm not quite sure which, but it's often quoted that women do have to feel they've got a lot more of the skills before they will switch career or go for a promotion.
Certainly, we see that when we're looking at female executives. They tend to wait until they've ticked every point on the job requirements before they'll make their application for promotion. Men won't tend to do that on the whole, and that often means that women who could have achieved a promotion at an earlier stage don't, or that women who are going forward for jobs are less confident in themselves in what they can achieve, and that means they may not get the job even though they could perform the job equally or better than other candidates. So I think that is a reticence on their part, and sometimes that leaves them also feeling very demoralised because they've put themselves forward. They've tried to do their very best, but they haven't necessarily achieved what they could have achieved if they'd planned well.
Well, this is Women and Money on Share Radio Morning, and we'll have more advice if you're thinking of changing your career or if you'd like a pay rise in just a moment.
Share Radio.
Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Road to Ruin. But today I'm issuing a critical new warning to all British listeners. Britain is under attack and your personal and financial security is in grave danger. To find out why, visit BritainUnderAttack.com. The threat of this devastating attack increases every day, and it's crucial you act before it's too late. To see what you can do about it, visit BritainUnderAttack.com right away. It's not too late to prepare. See my full warning at BritainUnderAttack.com today.
This is a live update for UK businesses. Right now, the world wants the UK's goods and services. Our reputation for quality and innovation means there are buyers around the world wanting to work with your business. The demand is out there. You should be too. Search Exporting is Great.
Sharing ideas about money. This is Share Radio.
This is Share Radio Morning and I'm Sarah Pennells, and we're talking about getting a new job or being paid more for your existing job. My guests are Mildred Talabi, who's an award-winning career blogger, speaker and author, Richard Alderson, who's the founder of Career Shifters, and Melanie Stancliffe, who's an employment partner with Erwin Mitchell. And Melanie, are there some people who, you know, they might have that break over Christmas, reevaluating their life, go back to their job, maybe don't get the bonus they're expecting, or discover that actually on a cold January their you know, trek into work is less appealing than they thought? Do some people maybe make a hasty decision that possibly they might regret sometime down the road?
Yes, I think we'd definitely advise clients to avoid that itchy feet, that knee-jerk reaction. You want to check your bonus entitlement. Oftentimes it will say that you're not entitled if you are under notice or you leave before the payment date, even though you've completed the year that the performance was being assessed in. So certainly wait. Make sure that you get the payment check, and then look at making sure that you've got something that's fair for what you have contributed that year. And women aren't very good at doing that. We found that a lot of women will receive a lower bonus than the male sitting next to them. And it's certainly something where they can ask the question, and they can ask their employer, what's the basis, an objective basis for this assessment?
I mean, we had some new figures out just last week on the gender pay gap, which I know is a slightly, you know, can be not necessarily people sort of sitting next door getting different bonuses or anything. But there was some research out a few weeks ago that was looking at the difference in the pay rates between men and women across different sectors and careers. And some of the sectors, I mean, the pay difference was staggering, particularly those where there was quite a large percentage of the pay was made up by bonus. So what are your tips then? I mean, we've had, you know, Mildred was saying, got to kind of toot your horn in terms of your career. What are your tips for women to either get that pay rise or to get that promotion? You know, 2017, this is the year you get the job you want, or you get paid at the rate you want for your job.
I'd certainly agree with the other speakers that women want to take more control over what they're doing. I think they need to go back to the KPIs and the objectives, making sure that they're achieving those. They want to have real one-to-ones with their line management, talking about what needs to be achieved in order for them to get that next pay grade or to get that bonus. When it comes to their entitlement, they have the right to be treated fairly, well, equally, and receive equal pay with those around them. So I think it's very much looking at what you're entitled to under your contract, under the law, and also making sure that in practice you are putting yourself in the best position and investing your time in the things that will count.
And Mildred, what are some of the sort of quick hits that you know, women can do to make sure that their CV actually paints them in the best light? Because, you know, we're not talking about telling porcupines lying here, but it's actually having a CV that somebody will read it and will immediately get that you do have the right skills.
Yeah, I think one of the tips I do advise women and everybody to do all year round in your current job is always keep a small notepad, even if it's by your desk, or, you know, if you're digital, you can do it on your phone, but of your achievements as you go along the role. Anytime you do anything that's significant, write it down, because when it comes to writing your CV, you're not going to remember all of it in full detail if you haven't been capturing it along the way. So that's just something to do. But even if you're not job hunting, every 6 months, update your CV with all your latest skills and achievements. And in terms of how you position that on your CV, it's really important that this is on the first page and as high up as possible. So you lead off with your personal profile, and then you're hitting the employer straight away with your skills, and then highlight a few significant achievements from your career history that you'd also put on the first page, so that from straight away from looking at your CV, you're selling yourself from the beginning, and then you can fill out all the rest of the details of your work experience and education, etc. But it's just it's important that the first page of your CV hit the ground running with your key skills and your significant achievements from your work history.
And Mildred, I mean, I was really interested in the titles of the books you've written, that the science of successful job hunting, because I think a lot of people just think, oh, you know, I'll go for this job and maybe I won't get it. And as Melanie said, feel a bit knocked back. But what is scientific about it, or what should your strategy be if there's a job that you actually think, you know, I only live once, I don't want to do the job I'm doing now, I want to do something I feel passionate about? How do you go about nailing that job that you would love?
Yeah, great question. The science part of it is the fact that there is a formula to job hunting. It's not just a lucky dip where you send out your CV and cross your fingers and hopefully, you know, you'll get it. So especially in this day and age, just sending out your CV to a job is no longer enough. So if there's a job you particularly like and you're interested in, A, try and talk to somebody at the company. You know, talk to somebody at the company to get a phone conversation where possible, connect with them on LinkedIn, you know, send off your CV by all means, make sure it's the best CV you can possibly send, along with a cover letter, but also try and network with individuals in the organization as well. If it's a role posted by a recruiter, find out who the recruiter is, have a phone call with them, a conversation even before you apply, because in some cases you can get information that way that you may not have known about in terms of what the main priorities of the job are from the employer side of things. So it's just being proactive. Network, network, network. As one of the other speakers said, network. Make sure you're constantly networking with people, even when you're not job hunting, because you don't know when you're going to need that contact for the time that you're ready to move on. And if there's a particular organization that you want to work with, again, if you're not on LinkedIn, I'd recommend you do that straight away. But if you already have a LinkedIn profile and you've been networking gradually across the years, you can check to see if there's anybody you know at the company already, and then have a quick chat with them about the role and maybe see if they can put in a good word for you. Because if you're a warmer applicant, you're more likely to go forward than somebody who's applying just you know, from filling it out on a job advert, a job site or something like that. So just try and think out of the box. Try and think of ways that you can get noticed by the employer. Try and think of ways that you can connect with the employer, potential employer, beyond just sending your CV and cover letter from a job site like everybody else would do.
And Richard, when it actually comes to making that leap, particularly if maybe you are having a big change of direction, possibly you're going to start to work for yourself, or you might be going into a sector that you're not familiar with, in terms of, you know, whether it's the right thing to do, is it just a question of drawing up a list, pros and cons, or are there other tips that you can give women who might be thinking of quite a dramatic change?
So we recommend people run small tests and small experiments before making a shift. There are a huge number of risks associated with leaving your job. Most importantly, it puts food and shelter in your life. And so what we don't recommend is that people just jack in their job if they're not happy and without a plan. Sometimes that's the only way, and sometimes if their role is made redundant, then that happens. However, what we recommend doing is running small tests, so meeting people in different fields that you're interested in, getting involved in small ways, whether it's shadowing someone in the workplace, whether it's doing small amounts of voluntary or pro bono work, and getting a feel for those different roles and different environments that they might be working in, so that they can really understand up front, without leaving their current job, whether it's something that may work. At the same time, and building on what Mildred has just said, we say look for people, not for jobs. The best way that you can open up opportunities as a career changer is people. First of all, there's a huge hidden job market. 80% of jobs are never even advertised. And secondly, working through people is a fantastic way to really understand what other roles are like. And therefore, that's really the approach and people we work with to take.
Okay, well, and Melanie, what would your last tip be? Just for, you know, a woman who's listening thinking, actually, I'm just fed up with my job. I don't know whether I want a better job, more money or a different job. Last tip.
I think I'd identify first, if you can, what it is within your current role that's making you uncomfortable and what changes you would like to see to that. They may not all be achievable, but you can at least start there. And if that's not working or if that's something that you can't do, then something external, look at options. And I think our caller's right. Try and see if you could go part-time to try something out with a guaranteed income before you start making that leap.
And in the current environment, do you think that employers are receptive to having a conversation about, even if they can't give you more money, maybe about giving you a different way of working or more responsibilities or something that more training?
Definitely. They're trying to reduce their overhead costs, so they're more flexible. But also, they're trying to retain talent. Talent costs an awful lot. They've got to find it. They've got to keep it. They've got to hire it in the first place. So they're very much receptive.
Great stuff. Well, thank you very much indeed. That was Melanie Stancliffe, who is an employment partner with Irwin Mitchell Solicitors. We're also joined by Richard Alderson from Career Shifters and Mildred Talabi, who's an award-winning career blogger, speaker and author. If you want to know more about changing your career, there's an article about that on my website, savvywoman.co.uk. There's also lots of information about your rights in the work and employment section.